Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
War, the one field man excels at. And in the 20th century, we surpassed every expectation with our nature's inherent cruelty. There was the Great War, then the war to end all wars, followed by 50 years of Cold War. They had to be renamed to World War I and World War II, thanks to the Korean War. Vietnam War, not really a war. Some called it the Vietnam Conflict. And so it goes. Well, OK, it goes. It heads off on that side of things there. We have a challenge, but those weren't my words. They were the words of our ace author in the Author of the Week this week. It's the return of James L. Hill. How are you, James?
Very good. I thought that sounded familiar.
Yeah. Well, you see, since the last awesome time we connected with your good self, we felt that it was only right to seek out some of your material. And you know my love for science fiction. I mean, the Killer series is equally wonderful, but I figured we'd actually go with your wonderful text, Pegasus and Journey to New Eden. Can you believe, James, it is actually nearly a year since you last made your debut as Author of the Week. It was Friday, March the 31st, 2023, when you were last with us.
Well, time flies, yes.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's just an illusion as well from that point of view. So now,
yes, it is. I don't believe in time. I'll tell you that right now.
Traced in material existence. This is so true. We do have a bonus, though. This time around, in addition to myself, we have a wonderful postgraduate student who's actually based in Romania, from Bucharest. Anna Koshkinel is with us. So are you well, Anna?
Hi, yes, I'm well. I'm very happy to be here and to meet James. Yeah. It's an honor to meet you.
Absolutely. James, of course, as we said, a degree in computer programming, which is your other love. You're a multi-genre author. We were quoting from one of your science fiction epics, etc. But you're probably best known for the wonderful four-part adult urban crime series, the Killer series, etc. And Killer with Ice Eyes is also out about. So what's the last year been like for you, James, in terms of, you know, since we last sort of shot the old transatlantic breeze? I realize when I say shot in New York, it could have a whole different meaning, but, you know, that's the good thing.
Oh, we shoot all kinds of things here. The breeze, a lot of
yeah, exactly. So how was 2023 for you, and is 2024 shaping up to be even better?
I would say yes. 2023, I jumped into the horror vein of writing. I was asked to write for an anthology for kids. So they write horror stories for to support different charities for children. Mm. It calls Scares That Care. Mm. And so I was asked to write a story in that anthology, and I did. And then I've been wanting to write a horror novel forever because Stephen King is one of my favorite authors. And, of course, Edgar Allan Poe and, you know. So after writing that, it really got my juices going, and I started on a horror novel. It's called The House of Sun and Shadow. Hmm. So yeah. That's what I'm working on now. That's my current work that I'm...
Well, it works well. Yeah. Killer with Ice Eyes, of course, the fourth book in the Killer series quadrilogy, really. I love the quote you actually go in with Isaiah. Learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the cause of the widow. Come now, let us settle the matter, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Though they are red as crimson, they shall be like wool. So it's always nice to actually start off with a little text from Isaiah there, from the basic instruction booklet for the life experience, shall we say, or the Bible. What were you thinking about when you produced that? Because it kind of does echo very much with the tale of the whole sequence. And, of course, the first character we see in chapter one, the ball buster, Corinne.
Yeah, basically, this is the culmination of the series. Mm. So we have gone from Nikki and Mojo getting into a life of crime, kind of like being born into it or raised in it. And now they have gone to the next generation, which is Morris's daughter. We met her back in Killer with Three Heads. And so now she has come of age. She has grown up, and she is about to take over the criminal empire.
Well, I'm just showing Anna and the benefit of the listener, the killer with ice eyes. She obviously looks as though she's very much kind of a kick-ass individual from that point of view. So very good. Scary as well, has to be said. Okay, Anna, any questions you'd like to put to James at the moment?
Well, yes, I was looking at the titles of the books and they are really interesting. I mean, Killer with the Heart. I'm just wondering, since I haven't had the chance actually to dive into all four of your books, other than read a bit about them. When you chose these titles, did you choose the first title and then all the other three came by? Or was I'm going to write about this and these four are the titles altogether?
Actually, The Killer with a Heart, the title came when I was about 75% through with the book. Mm-hmm. And that's when there's part of the book where Nikki tell Mojo that he's a killer with a heart, meaning that, you know, yeah. Mojo, Nikki is a thief at heart. That's his main thing to life and to his criminal ways. He's mostly interested in the money because he's a mobster. And so, but Morris is a stone cold killer and he's somewhat psychotic and somewhat sociopathic. And so in Killer with a Heart, they're after Morris to get him into this type of situation. And so Nikki admonishes him by telling him, hey, you know, the only thing worse than being a thief with a conscience is being a killer with a heart. And so that line, when I wrote that line, a light bulb went off, you know, I heard angels singing, all kinds of stuff came through. And I knew at that point that was going to be the name of that book. And from then on, the rest of the books in the series, because I had the whole series planned out, was going to then relate to different body parts or the idea that we're going to go killer with a heart, killer with three heads, killer with black blood, and then finally ending up with the daughter being the killer with ice eyes. So it was at that moment the epiphany hit me, and that was the birth of the titles, not necessarily the story, but the titles.
I mean, I'll throw in one which I'm sure you won't have actually heard of, but I'm very tempted to actually include this interview after we've done our wonderful feature with yourself, actually. I wasn't aware that today we were doing a run on people who actually had overactive bladders. So maybe Killer with the Overactive Bladder could actually be a possible title. You know, I'm just thinking.
A sequel.
Or a prequel, one of the two. Yeah, astounding. But maybe that should be
Killer in the Diaper.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
That might work.
Exactly. Yeah, could be onto something here. I mean, of the genres that you work within, I mean, because we haven't even mentioned historical fantasy and the Gemstone series, do you have a favorite, or is there one which you kind of think, yeah, actually, you know, I want to go back to New Eden, I want to actually sort of focus on the Emerald Review, etc., or where would you go?
My favorite stories to write are sci-fi stories, actually. Mm. And the Killer series took me far away from that. and the Gemstone series, the Emerald Lady, was taking me more into fantasy. Yeah. And now I've gone into horror, but at some point I'm going to swing back around and get into the prequel for Pegasus. Mm. So I'm going to get into my sci-fi. I wrote a lot of short sci-fi stories, and I'm going to get back into the sci-fi world and go back to space travel and all that kind of good stuff that comes from that that side of my brain, because I love technical stuff. I love science. I was a kid who had a chemistry set at 8 years old. I convinced my parents that I should have a chemistry set, and then I went about trying to make explosives. So, hey.
Well, if you're in the Bronx, I suppose it's one way of actually waking up the neighbourhood. Or maybe not. I don't know. I mean, actually, I've got to throw in another thing. Well, from the point of view of a sister show that we actually do and a sister podcast called Resonance Rewind, we were discussing last week Land of the Giants. Do you remember Land of the Giants, James? Were you an Owen Allen Land of the Giants fan?
Yes, I remember that show. Yeah, I used to watch that.
Yeah, yeah, because yeah, I'm thinking that might be, you know, we could do a sort of mashup of, you know, the
of turkeys.
Yes. Well, I mean, you say turkey. We were actually one of the episodes. It wasn't a turkey episode, but there was a giant turkey in the episode, which Alexander Fitzhugh was desperately trying to actually capture without success, because in the end they actually sort of released the turkey. A bit like the presidential pardon, but obviously done in an Owen Allen way. So there we go. My long-winded line there is to bring us to the next little line. What science fiction do you appreciate? Do you like space opera, space fantasy? Do you kind of go for a sort of more expensive vision of the whole thing? Where do you actually position yourself in terms of the science fiction you like? Or is it robots?
I kind of like what I would call near time or near future science fiction. Things that will happen within one's lifetime or maybe two generations, you know, nothing that's like, I love Star Trek, don't get me wrong. Star Trek was, you know, one of my favorites, and I watched just about all of them until they started putting them on, like, streaming channels where you had to pay, you know.
Yeah, there is a limit. I mean, you know, to expect sort of people in Hollywood to actually make money from their products, what, for goodness sakes? Oh,
you know, this far down the line, you know, they probably made plenty. They could keep it on, you know, free TV. But anyway, that took you hundreds of years into the future. And so you can imagine anything could be happening at that point. You know, let's say you go into the Dark Ages. Mm. And you say, okay, what's going to happen in the next 1,000 years? You know, this is 1,010. What do you think, or 1,020? What do you think life is going to be like in 2020? Mm. Do you think anybody would have any idea what would be going on?
Hey, listen, I mean, this is the first time, actually, in our Author of the Week series, which we started actually during the pandemic, where it hasn't actually been just completely out of the studio. We're actually in the studio, in Studio 1B. So Jessica obviously looking a bit bemused here, thinking, that doesn't look like the normal backdrop. Where's the usual sort of backdrop that's actually in there? Jessica, of course, is one of our fabulous North Carolina correspondents. Wasn't able to join us when we first connected you back last year, James, but I'm sure, Jessica, you've got a few questions you want to put to your New York colleague here and writer extraordinaire and computer programmer. I mean, you know, being a native from the South Bronx, Fort Apache, literally in the 60s, I mean, that's dangerous living, that is. By the way, he does quite like Land of the Giants, so good news there.
Excellent, excellent taste.
Do anybody remember the time tunnel?
Yeah, of course. The another remember the Alamo, the last episode that we sort of went through. The Titanic. Oh, in fact, 32 episodes. They almost go around the whole thing all over again. Two American scientists lost in the mists of fate, etc. You know, quite frankly, just amazing television, really. Anyway, yeah. We could wax lyrical, but what the hey? Anyway, Jessica, over to you.
Well, I feel like I have so many questions, but honestly, one of the ones that I really want to ask. I think what really interests me about crime fiction sometimes is how you go from having the idea and having it solved and everything surrounding the crime and the investigation. I was wondering how you come up with your ideas, and is there a certain order you write it in? Do you know the ending when you start, or do you go in chronological order?
I always know the ending of the story when I start it. I usually have two things in mind. I usually have the end of the story, I know where it's going to end up at, and I usually have a title. Now, one of those two things come first. I think of that's a good title for a story, and then I'll think of some ending that will fit that title. And sometimes, like I would say, the title came 3/4 of the way in because I had a completely different title in mind for Killer with a Heart. But when I hit that line in the book, it automatically blossomed, and that was the title. But yeah, I write forward, but I think backwards.
That's interesting.
So I know where I'm going to end up, and then I figure out, okay, well, what would have got them started? What would have started this whole process? You know, it's like sort of like falling down the hole. You know you're going to hit the bottom when you fall in, but it's, how did you not see the hole as you walked and fell into that hole? You know. And the deeper the hole, the darker it is. And of course, maybe different things that will come to mind that I could save myself from hitting bottom. You know, on the way down, as we used to say in the Bronx, you can learn to fly. They used to call it a Bronx flying lesson. they would take you up to the roof and throw you off.
That's nice.
And
it's a way in which New Yorkers make you feel welcome, I believe, basically.
Yes.
You know?
Just like people in London.
You have to learn to fly before you hit the ground.
Yeah.
Not too many people do.
Yeah. Do they have a similar thing in Bucharest, Anna?
Before you go or after?
Well, we're quite friendly in Bucharest. I mean, I thought we were weird, but apparently compared to...
Hey, citizens of the Bronx, I'm sure you can actually knock Bucharest citizens and Romanians out of the... I mean, what could they offer, James? A few vampires. I mean, honestly.
Yes. That's in the new book coming up, but we didn't go to Bucharest. We went to Germany. But
nearby, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Nearby, yes. I have to take a trip to Bucharest.
You most definitely have to.
Yes. I do believe in Kilo Isai, we get around that area. I forget where we wind up at. Mm. I think in Armenia. But anyway, you know, I'm a world traveler in my head.
Absolutely.
I've been to a few places like Egypt and stuff, and there's a whole lot of other places that I would want to go to and see. So.
And being in New York, the world comes to you as well, so I've told.
Well, I know a lot of people from different places because I grew up in New York. Yeah. We have a whole lot of people from Bucharest.
Wow. People from Bucharest and New York. James, once again, you just... Phenomenal. So one of the things we didn't ask you on your debut of the program, primarily because Jessica wasn't with us, was what we call the nutrition question. And this is something which certainly Jessica is committed to from the point of view of North Carolina in particular. Not too far away from New York, obviously.
Oh,
close.
Oh, just down the road a bit.
Literally just down the road. You know, probably
would
drive.
Yeah,
exactly. So Jessica, would you like to put the nutrition question to James, and let's see whether this particular dietary recommendation with which you're trying to conquer the world is going to make it in the Bronx.
Yes, try to ask everyone. I always hope the answer is yes, but have you ever had or tried sweet tea or boiled peanuts by chance?
Yes, on both. I live in Virginia now. I've lived in Virginia.
Excellent.
Oh, wow. So when I moved to Virginia, of course, sweet tea, we make tea. First off, I'm a very big tea drinker. So I usually make hot tea with sugar and lemon, but I make iced tea. And do you ever make sun tea?
Sun tea? I haven't had that before.
Okay, sun tea is where you take the tea bag, you put them in cold water, you sit it in the sun, and you let it naturally...
Percolate. Percolate, I think,
percolate.
Is the phrase.
Yes, it doesn't actually percolate, though. It doesn't boil.
No, it's true.
I
thought
you were Romanian.
Yeah. Out. Yes. And so with sweet tea, is you know, they mix the sugar in, and it's usually very sweet, which is okay. Now, as for boiled peanuts, I don't really like boiled peanuts. And I got a bag of boiled peanuts by mistake because I like my peanuts roasted and salted.
That, you know what? That's fair. You like the sweet tea, so we can compromise there.
Okay.
You see, this is all they need to do between Vladimir Putin and Zelensky. You know, if they only actually sort of had that compromise situation, the world would be in a lot less stressful scenarios, you know?
That's right.
When you're talking about Russia and Eastern Europe, you don't have sweet tea. You had vodka.
Ah.
Vodka, yes. Vodka. I used to drink a lot of vodka. Let's see, can you see it? No. All right, let's turn it that way. They were my keg, and now my keg is filled with bourbon. I grew up drinking vodka, and I do mean grew up drinking vodka when I was like 12. So part of growing up in the South Bronx, you learn to drink, you learn to curse, and you learn to fight.
Yeah.
Not
that's
necessarily in
that's
that
the prime medicine in Eastern Europe.
I mean, so James, when can you take over the presidency of Russia? Just out of interest, you know, can we sort of
anytime.
Look to
anytime. Right. I'd say drop me in Russia. Give me a 45 because I'm going to need something big.
I think so.
I usually carry a 9, but you know, give me a 45 because you know I want to be loud and in charge.
The way forward, Anna.
But James, all in all, I have a very important question to you, and I'm actually really curious. So you're writing many journals and books, and I was wondering, out of all the books that you have written and all the characters, if you were able to give life to one character, which one would be and why?
The power of the creator, James.
Yes, if I were to bring one person to life, Oh, that would be very difficult and very. I have to think about this for a second because some of these people you would not want to bring to life. So I would think maybe Zach from Pegasus, because he's very smart, he's very socially minded, and he's not very dangerous as a person. So, he's very good at trying to save the world, unlike some of the people in the Killer series. And the mermaids would be nice to bring alive too from the Emerald Lady, because they live 1,000 years, so bringing one or two of the mermaids to life wouldn't be bad. Some of the other
Valuable, yeah.
people.
You get a millennium for each mermaid that you bring back to life, so an additional millennium can always be good, I would have thought.
A mermaid for a vampire.
Yeah, I think I'd
We
probably
could
get.
try something like that.
Pegasus, A Journey to New Eden. Share with us, James, what is it? I mean, we gave a little tease there in terms of the introduction with the prologue and the lines with respect to that. And of course, you talk about war, why war is good for business. And to stay in business, one needed a product that was in demand and renewable, regardless of the underlying causes war fed itself. You can see it. Once it's unputdownable. You can't really just sort of put it down and expect to work through the whole thing there. But with that line, welcome to the 21st century. The old sign on the workstation greeted him as usual. Tell us about what your thoughts were in Pegasus, A Journey to New Eden.
All right, I actually wrote that story way back in the 1980s, and my then wife, the only one I had, she asked me what did I think about the nuclear assault treaties
Yeah.
that
Strategic
America and Russia
arms
were
limitation talks.
That's the one.
Yeah.
And
It's
I said,
only
well,
you and me who can remember them. Jessica and Anna were not born, so we appreciate
yes.
that.
And so I said we didn't have anything to worry about with nuclear war because neither Russia nor America were going to try to destroy the world. But when you start adding in some of these other rogue nations, and especially people who believe in Armageddon, we might have a problem. But even then, we may not have that much of a problem because we don't have any place else to go. Now, people who would think that, we're all going to go to heaven, or at least they were going to go to heaven, that would be a problem for everybody else. But for the two major powers, we didn't have a place to go, so there wasn't going to be a nuclear war between us. And then we discovered other planets. And the planet closest to us would be New Eden in the Alpha Centauri system, which is only 4 light years away. So once you can, and in science fiction, everybody travels at the speed of light or better. And mostly better because just traveling at the speed of light will still take you hundreds of years to
You've
get
got your warp
beyond the
speed,
Alpha
you've got your
Centauri.
stargates, you've got your
Yes, the
wormholes. There's so many
wormhole.
ways.
Teleportation is the best. If you can come up with anything, teleportation is it. Wormholes are basically teleportation. But you have to be able to travel at least light speed to get anywhere. So in the next couple of generations, from the time I started writing that book, I figured we will hit light speed within 2 generations. It's not impossible. Everybody says it's impossible to go faster than the speed of light and this and that. I don't think so. I just think we don't have the technology, and at the time we did not have the technologies that would allow us to get there. But
People used to say if
once we
man
get
were
there,
meant to fly, he'd have wings. And
yeah.
he did.
Now, at the time, we didn't know of any other planets outside of our own solar system. Now we know there are thousands of planets outside of our solar system. So
It's
things are not
prediction.
impossible.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And so
absolutely.
that's where Pegasus comes into, because Pegasus is the modern day Noah's Ark. We're going to take all the best parts of the planet, whether people like it or not, put it on a spaceship that we build out in space, because launching stuff from Earth and then all that kind of stuff, is it going to work? We're going to have to build this thing in space using the asteroid belt and material that's already out there. Why build it on Earth if we can just go out into space and grab the material that we need that's floating around out there, build our spaceship, take life from the Earth, put it on the spaceship, and go. And the reason why you're going to take all this stuff from Earth, because you're not going to spend your time going back and forth. It's like when they came to America, right? The Europeans and everybody, when they came to America, what did they do? They took apart their ships and they built houses out of them. Because they knew they weren't going back. And they had
like the Vikings. The Vikings did exactly the same thing, basically.
The Vikings did the same thing. The Spanish did one other thing, which was a little crazier. They burned their ships. So it was like, you are not going back. And you're going to have to try to make it on your own, you know. Yeah. I would have burnt the ship. I would have said, let's
It's a bit drastic. I mean, you know, it's a sort of Spanish-Latin temperament probably coming across there. And you know, if only they hadn't brought the plague, we might have still had the Mayan civilization with us today, but still never mind.
Yeah, probably.
It's a tough call. So would you actually go up with, I mean, given that William Shatner also took the Jeff Bezos rocket ship trip last year, would you go into space, James? Is this something which appeals for yourself?
I would. I just don't want to go up and come back down, you know.
Right.
Because the chances of something going wrong is still pretty good, you know. So if I were going to go, I want to go someplace.
Right.
I want to go to the moon.
Yeah.
I want to go to Mars. You know, I want to go somewhere. I just don't want to jump in there and, you
just
know,
go up
shoot
and down.
Off and come back in an hour, you know.
There's a lot of risk for
very little.
Precisely, reward. It's like those early sort of attempts to cross the Channel or the Atlantic Oceans, like the Blériot brothers or the Orville and Orville Wright, basically. You know, when they were in that North Carolina beach, the Wright brothers, I'm sure Jessica was saying, you want to just go more than just up and down. You want to go somewhere. You want to have something to actually do.
Yeah, you must stay.
Very critical. Jessica, back to yourself. Any questions for James?
Yeah, so I'm actually really curious. Well, I think it's really interesting that being in the Bronx, you've gotten to see so much. You were talking about nuclear weapons, and I actually had just been reading about the rally against nuclear weapons in New York City in 1982. So it's really interesting that you would have witnessed all that. There's such a change in opinion from the 60s to now, I feel like. And New York City just feels like an epicenter. Much cultural shifting in the U.S. So I'm actually curious about how often the Bronx and New York have affected your writing or kind of gotten into your writing.
Oh, a lot. I mean, we always say that, you know, you're from New York, but you never really leave New York. And of course, we all say that New York is the center of the universe. You know, if you ever meet anybody, a native New Yorker, they're going to tell you, no, everything revolves around New York. And so, because we have so many different cultures, and the cultures wind up in little pockets in different neighborhoods. Like, you can go through the Bronx and meet people from Armenia, meet people from Africa, meet people from, you know,
North Carolina.
Asia, old place, North Carolina.
Wow.
So you get to sample people culture if you're open to that. And I am. I'm open to the meeting people and sampling their cultures. And so you get to meet people and you get to experience what they think, how they feel. And it broadens your perspective. One thing I always tell people, you know, you got to get out and travel. You know, don't stay in your house or in your little, you know, town and think that you know the world. You don't. You know, you got to get out. You got to, because if you meet people and see the world from their perspective, and I mean open your eyes and actually listen and experience what they have experienced and understand where they're coming from, you'll find, first off, you're not really that much different from other people. And everybody really are looking for the same things in life. You know, we all want to be happy. You know, we all want to be rich. You know,
we're happy and rich, perhaps, you know.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you can't be both. Ask Trump how happy he is.
Difficult to tell, really. Difficult to tell.
Or how rich he is. Yeah, that's going to be the other problem.
Anna, any thoughts from yourself?
Well, I was wondering, do you think at any point are you going to try to write, I don't know, a romance book?
Yes. Are you going to go rom-com genre, James?
That and children books would probably be the hardest thing to ever write. Because when I thought about writing romance, I went to a romance conference one time, and I learned all the things you have to have in a romance, and I was like, okay, I don't have any of those. I break a lot of the rules on page one. So I would have to really sit down and probably regulate myself in telling until I can write a good love story. I don't know if I can write a good romance. And I definitely can't write a children's story.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, interesting. And one thing that I also need to ask you, I don't think we actually touched on it on your debut on the production last year. The immortal words and letters AI, artificial intelligence, and ChatGPT. I mean, as a publisher, because we haven't, I mean, we've talked about your writing, which is fantastic, but as indeed a publisher, and you started, of course, Rock Hill Publishing LLC, initially to publish your own work and then to give others access to the literary world. Are you threatened by that, or is it a case of, well, if robots are producing stuff, as long as they don't take my sweet tea, all will be well with the world?
Oh, no, because I'm also a programmer, remember? That's
Well, that was why I
what
thought it was a particularly apt answer, because obviously you can be gamekeeper and poacher basically at the same time. You can program your own sort of scenarios.
I mean, as long as we keep our hand on the plug, we'd be okay with AI. And people think of AI as being this, all-consuming, all-knowledge, the wizard behind the curtain. It's not. It's only as powerful as the information we feed into it, as with any system. And so the Terminator movies that came out was the idea, okay, they gave AI the nuclear codes, and they say, okay, solve the problems that we have with the world. And what does AI do and what it usually does now? The problem with the world is people.
No, I
You
agree.
guys can't get along. Yeah, you guys just can't get along with each other. So Asimov, was it Asimov? Yeah, I think Asimov put in the
Three laws of
rules of
robotics.
robotics. Yeah. And one of them is that a robot can't harm a human being. A robot can't kill itself. And it can only kill itself if it's to save a human being. So those are the three things of robotics. And I think we will never get away from using those three ideas. But, first off, I don't want to create something that's going to kill me. And
Very wise.
I do believe that no matter what anybody says, no one is giving a robot the nuclear codes,
Well, we hope not. I mean, having said that, there's a vice chancellor of the university that I know that could well do that, but that's by the by. It's just
Yeah,
a
I wouldn't put that in. I wouldn't put that in my programs.
No, good to hear.
Not unless I was dead. I have to be dead a few years, then I'd be like, oh, well, I'm gone, so I don't care what the damn thing does.
We just have to head on there. And how can people actually follow you, James, via the socials? Are you on X? Are you on Instagram? Is there a website that you'd recommend? Where can we point people to actually say, go there? I mean, you can obviously go to online and do as I've done, purchase the books. They're very economical. They're very nice, and they're jolly good reads. So where would you go?
Yes, you can find me online almost anywhere. But the first place you would want to start is at rockhillpublishing.com. That's the publishing company. So you not only get me, but you get everybody I publish. And we got a wide variety of writers, romances. Got a romance writer there. So, we cover a lot of genres. My own website is jlhill-books.com. You can find me there. I'm on Instagram. You just have to look up either James Hill or JL Hill. I'm on Instagram, X, whatever, Facebook. I'm all over Facebook. So yeah, I mean, I Google myself at least once a month to
Very
see where
good.
I'm
Again,
at.
very wise, I have to say. And not illegal, so that's good. James, it's been terrific connecting with your good self. A couple of questions to wrap up with. Well, actually, three. I'm going to give you a musical choice this time, and I'll be intrigued to see where you go, given that you actually have the dedication for Pegasus and Journey to New Eden to Nicky, Johnny, Al, Kenny, and James. And if you feel that you can't go on and your will's sinking low, just believe and you can't go wrong. In the light, you'll find the road. You will find the road. So I'm going to offer you either A Whole Lot of Love by Led Zeppelin, or Good Times, Bad Times by Led Zeppelin, or Odyssey and Native New Yorker. Which musical piece would you like? Native New Yorker, Whole Lot of Love, or Good Times, Bad Times?
I have to go with A Whole Lot of Love.
Yeah, I thought you might. I thought I had a feeling you might. Anyway, before we actually press that button, not that button, the other button, Jessica's got one question. And Anna's got another one. So, Jessica, would you like to bowl the first question to James, which last year he did answer, but he had to deal with me asking two questions. And as you know, that can be very traumatic at the best of times. So off you go, Jessica.
Yes, James, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
I have had a very fun Zoomer with you today, and that's the first time I ever heard it called a Zoomer. I'm gonna have to
Can
use
include
that.
it and put it in your next book.
Yes,
Yeah, absolutely.
it's going in.
And Anna, your question?
Can we look forward to featuring you this time, not in so distant future?
Will you come
Yes,
back?
anytime you like, I will be back. Just
Less
let me
than a
know.
year next time.
Well, there's got to be an intriguing package to the native New Yorker who ended up in Virginia. I mean, that's got a tale in itself, really, that I think we need to sort
Oh,
of work
yeah.
through. And encountered sweet tea, because, clearly that's another sort of aspect which,
Yes.
yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
sweet tea is good. I will say that. Sweet tea is good.
so, well, I mean, we could clip that out, Jessica. You could use it as your little ringtone if you like. Sweet tea
I
is
will.
good.
I'll have your endorsement now for sweet tea,
Terrific.
and I'll have to try sun tea.
Yes, dry sun tea is
We can't do
fun.
that in the UK, unfortunately. We have no
Well,
sun.
yeah, fair enough. Fair point. I mean, I can't really argue that, Anna. You're absolutely right. James L. Hill, we salute you. Take care. Here's Led Zeppelin.
Give you my love. Wonder scenario without siren radio. Turn up everyone, save a siren sound.
Siren radio.
Come link into Miami, Paris to LA. Our global community wants to hear it play. Students participate, keep on keeping up, keep on keeping up.
Sorry,
keep on keeping up.
Sorry,
keep on keeping up.
Sorry, radio,
keep on keeping up. Say, siren radio.
A three-letter acronym. MOT, yes, can actually send shivers of possible anxiety and indeed stress through the most hearty souls if you happen to be a motorist whose car obviously requires an MOT on an annual basis, especially with respect to cost. And what about those advisories? Now, okay, I tend to always try and get the advisory sorted out as soon as possible afterwards, purely and simply because otherwise, who knows what could actually happen. But let's find out why many people are not actually doing that. They're probably putting themselves and their vehicles at risk. We've got two fabulous folk to actually talk about this. First of all, Ace TV presenter and indeed the legendary, the female mechanic, it's Hannah Gordon. How are you, Hannah?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. And we also have eBay UK category lead for parts and accessories. That's Arjang Salehi. How are you, Arjang?
Brilliant, thank you.
Excellent. Hannah, we'll come to you first. I mean, these findings that one in three people state that they're unable to afford the repairs recommended by their MOT tests, the advisory we've spoken about. And indeed, a third of UK adults are not looking to actually fix car issues themselves because they've got all sorts of things. Is that just a case of, well, that's always been the case, or is it a case of actually with the cost of living crisis as well, more and more folk are actually sort of saying, well, I don't think we can afford this now?
Yeah, I think the cost of living crisis has a huge impact on it. I think cars now are very expensive as well to repair, so people are looking for, you know, the MOT simply just to get that done. But it's also important that advisories are looked at and repaired, and, you know, working alongside with eBay, we're looking at how we can help motorists, you know, to get their cars through MOTs pretty painlessly and also get their advisory sorted as quickly as possible, so that, you know, the next MOT isn't too bad either. So it's cost of living has a huge impact on it, and I think also what people, you know, train of thought as well with MOTs, they just want their car MOT so they can have it back. But it's important that advisories are addressed early, so to save you from having problems at your next MOT.
Yeah, absolutely. I was intrigued to actually see that Kirkcaldy Llandrindrod Wells, I don't think I've got the pronunciation there, but I think it's roughly Llandrindrod, Dundee, Truro, Plymouth, Exeter, Torquay, Salisbury, Bristol and Bath are the top 10 places motorists are likely to fail their MOT. I thought the MOT was kind of universal across the base, wasn't it? I mean, whether you were actually in Lincoln or indeed Newcastle.
It is. It's a nationwide standard for cars to meet. You know, I think statistics are quite vague on that, but I mean, what you've got is quite cars do go through certain problems. I mean, you may experience with those places, they may be more rural, so you may have more potholes, the cars may be going through, you know, more gear changes, and they're just in a harsher environment, so what you're getting is suspension damage and other damage to the vehicle that you may not get in the city. So that's possibly why we're seeing that breakdown of more failures. But, you know, it is a nationwide test for a car, so it is fairly uniform on that. You know, MOT testers have a certain criteria that they have to go through when they're testing the cars. So things like obviously lights, tyres, brakes are all the same tested across the board, whether you're up north or down south or in a city.
I thought that was the case, but I just wanted to clear it up. Arjang, coming to you good self, I mean, parts and accessories on eBay. We've seen the advertisements. We've seen the general ads about the whole thing. Is this a viable way forward, or is it a case of, oh, caveat emptor, buyer beware?
No, I mean, eBay is like one of the one-stop shops to ensure that you have everything you need before or after your MOT, from windscreen wipers to tyres to screen wash, so you have the best chance of passing first time. We do have millions of parts on eBay, so everything's there available, from new to certified refurbished or recycled. Yeah, so it's really get the right right part at the right price, and eBay's Assured Fit Guarantee and Parts Finder offers simplicity and safety.
Well, I've got to say, RJ, I'm highly impressed by the efficiency. Literally, as we're having this conversation, dropped into my e-box an eBay £5 exclusive app we're receiving. I mean, this is just amazing. I mean, I'm just so impressed with that level of kind of reciprocity. It's very good indeed.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it just shows the power. back to Hannah again, if we may. What is it about getting that MOT test that kind of makes it so stressful? I mean, I tend to anthropomorphize the vehicle, so whether it's been a Volkswagen Urban Fox or a Kia Picanto, etc., I kind of almost feel as though it's part of you, and you think, oh my goodness, it's being judged, etc. Is that it, or is it just a case of the fear of what could go wrong?
I think, you know, people rely on their cars so heavily. It's there's research that shows people would rather go to the dentist than get their car mooted. It's, you know, it's a crazy statistic. But, you know, cars, we rely so much on cars. They get us to work. They get, you know, the kids to school. They're just an essential piece of our everyday living. And I think people are worried that there's a cost involved as well. They're not sure if the car's going to pass. How much is it going to cost? Am I going to be without a car? And that kind of anxiety really plays on the fact, you know, that people don't like taking their cars for MOT, or they, you know, not looking forward to it. I think it's that unknown as well. You know, we're not all experts in cars, and it's the unknown of, is there something drastically wrong with my car? Is my car going to pass the MOT? So I think it's the anxiety factor of the unknown.
Yeah. And the most common advisories, I mean, I seem to think from a personal experience, it usually has to be one of the tyres needs to be replaced or sort of worn, or is slightly sort of close to the edge or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of things that can be advised, and a lot of them are really simple. They're things that can be checked or, you know, that people can do at home. So you've got obviously lamps, lights, reflectors, electrical equipment. We've got tires, like you said, you know, they can be checked at home, so you can cut down if that's an advisory or a failure. You've got things like just checking your screen wash, your wiper blades, any noises that may be coming from the car, obviously to do with suspension. There's a lot of things that people can do themselves, which will help lower the chance of the car failing or, you know, the advisories building up.
Now, Arjan, one of the things that eBay are actually doing is, of course, getting a team of expert mechanics who are available to do a pre-MOT check. Would you like to just tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so absolutely. So as mentioned, March is one of the busiest months of the year for MOT tests, and eBay is on hand to help motorists address their most common issues. So we at eBay have come to Woburn Safari Park for the day to have professional mechanics perform a pre-MOT check on some of the park's visitors' vehicles. The visitors will be loaned an eBay car to take around the safari, which is good, as we all know what can happen to your windscreen wipers for those little tricky monkeys. And on the return, the eBay mechanics will provide them with a rundown of the results. Like I say, with millions of parts available to purchase on eBay, our goal is to make sure that consumers save money on any repairs or advisories needed to pass their MOT first time.
It's the Woburn Safari Park, Bedfordshire, of course, if you're looking to actually work for the whole process. And Hannah, for people who aren't lucky enough to actually sort of check out those cheeky monkeys in Woburn Safari Park, etc., what would you actually suggest is worth doing when people are looking for advisories and maybe connecting with eBay to see if they can get those parts for a reasonable price?
Yeah, so the first thing, if your car's coming up for an MOT, is I would check simple things like your lights. Get a friend to help you check all your lights, brake lights, headlights, fog lights, indicators, everything like that, your wiper blades, your tyres. They're simple things that you don't need to be, you know, an experienced mechanic to check. Then once your car's passed its MOT and you've got your advisories, take a look down the list. Is there anything down there that you can do yourself if it's simply, you know, a lot of things, maybe like the headlights are like smoky, you can get degradation on the top, on the front of your headlights. You can get kits off eBay to help make those see through again. So that's quite an easy thing you can do at home. It's really quite a simple fix that someone can do that can be proud of when they've done it. It's a really quite cosmetic fix. Wiper blades you can get off eBay. Anything that will help get your car through to the next MOT and knock the advisories off. Obviously, some of the advisories will be only for professionals, brakes and suspension. It's something, you know, unless you're experienced or have a lot of kind of knowledge, I wouldn't, you know, go down that road of fixing those. But there's so many simple things you can do. eBay offer a huge marketplace of parts that you can use, quick delivery and good price. So it's worth definitely having a look through the advisories list of what you can fix yourself.
And have you always been a car fanatic, Hannah? I mean, I noticed there was a slight wrinkling in the nose when I said Urban Fox, Volkswagen, and indeed Kia Picanto. Well, I like those cars.
I love all cars. I'm not here to judge.
Judge,
any of your
no,
cars.
No, it's very true. Very
but,
important.
Yeah, I've been a mechanic for over 15 years, worked on cars since I was a young child, and experienced in restorations and electric and hypercar builds. So I've covered nearly every sector of the car industry, motorsport and things like that. So motorsport and cars run through my blood, and I, you know, I love working on them. I love driving them and love seeing people enjoy them.
Fantastic. Well, of course, people can locate you on X as the female mechanic. Is that the same handle for Instagram as well, or are you just an X exclusive?
No, I'm on X as female mechanic and on Instagram as it's just my full name, Hannah Gordon. So, yeah, I try and put as much car stuff on there as I can.
Fantastic. And of course, also a representative of Mend It For Money, Repair Lots and Motor Shed. It seems sort of fairly self-evident, Arjang, to actually say, if you want to find out more about eBay, we know which website to go to. But, you know, should we just say ebay.com and that'll take you there?
I think ebay.co.uk is the one to check.
Even better, absolutely. Yeah. Arjang Salahi. By the way, are you looking forward to checking out those monkeys yourself? I mean, have you seen?
I am absolutely cannot wait to get around there and see what's going on.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure everyone else is as well.
Excellent. Alan Salahi, eBay UK category lead for parts and accessories, and TV presenter and ace mechanic Hannah Gordon. Huge thanks and enjoy the safari.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
to hear it play.
Zion Radio.
Let them all create students participate. Keep on keeping on. Save our science.